Now for the sermon, our pastor, Mr. Steve Buchanan.
About this time of year, most years, maybe not most years, several years, I'll let it go, but every, let's put it this way, towards the end of the year, some years, I'll give a sermon on the kind of secular prophecies of mankind. And if you've been paying attention over the last 30 years, you'll know that I've kind of lambasted the experts because most of their secular prophecies and prognostications are spectacular failures. They just don't work out at all. Things that people say are going to happen, things that they prognosticate, it's... The thing is, most people don't check up on these guys, so they just get to pontificate every couple of years. Oh, wow, we better do this because this guy says this, right? So in 10 years, the polar ice caps are going to melt in Los Angeles and New York City will be underwater. For a lot of people, that might not be such a bad idea. If we don't drastically reduce the population explosion, we won't have enough food and water and millions are going to starve. That kind of solves the problem, though, doesn't it? I mean, if it's the case, so just kidding, just kidding. If we don't reduce our dependency on fossil fuels, we will permanently change the climate, making the earth warmer. But the people in Greenland might like to grow tomatoes again for the first time in 500 years. Have you ever considered that? So, and by the way, they did. 500 years ago, they were growing tomatoes in Greenland. You know why? Because there was climate change. There was climate change. It got so warm that they could grow vegetables in Greenland. Who knew? My intent is really not to argue these various points. That's not the intent of the sermon today. But I'm here to tell you that your life is probably not going to depend on avoiding global warming or starving to death. I mean, I've been in the church for going on 5 decades now, and I've never known of anybody that has suffered from global warming or starving to death. Now, maybe there have been a few members in Africa or someplace, India caught in some kind of horrible typhoon or war or something that has starved to death. I'm not aware of any, but I'm just going to say that very likely your life is not going to depend on you having enough food, at least in the next couple of years. And it might, I don't know, but you're probably not going to choke on the emissions from carbon emissions in your last gasping breath somehow. I don't think that's in the cards for you, and you're probably not going to warm the planet by driving an internal combustion engine, despite the experts who have convinced many people that that's exactly what's going to happen. These arguments are used as a means to change your behavior or to influence your mind so that you will be convinced that you're doing the right thing. And that is a key. That is a key. I want you to remember that. I want you to think about that today. A lot of these experts say things, and it comes out every year, say things that are designed to change your attitudes, your perceptions, your behaviors, because there is a constant battle for your attention, and the battle is for your mind. Your mind. Now, gave a sermon several weeks ago when I talked about this cute little guy here. This cute little guy in seventh grade. He's a good-looking guy. He had hair back then. Really, he did. Cute little guy, had to defend Rockefeller, not Rockefeller, had to defend Barry Goldwater, didn't do such a good job. But those of us that have been around for a while know that at least in some school systems, we were taught to think critically, to question and challenge at times. If you didn't have that experience, I'm kind of sorry for you, but I'm not saying that that particular training is greater than yours. I don't believe it is. I think that anybody that's probably in my generation was taught some of those critical thinking skills. But what you really need to be concerned about are not the dangers in your life that are presented to you by the experts, the gurus, the wizards of smart, people that are much smarter than you. They got to be, because look where they are. They're heading up this department, this agency, and they're telling you to do this. Some of the examples I use today, and it might be a lengthy introduction, I don't know, but some of the examples I use today might be considered a little bit controversial. Maybe very controversial. Some of you, hey, you want to argue? We won't argue, but we can have time for you during the messenger chat, okay? But let me present my facts. Let me present the evidence. But you do need to be concerned about the dangers that are presented, not by all the experts, because I don't really think most people pay attention. I don't think most church people really pay attention to the people that are saying that, you know, we're going to starve ourselves to death, or there's going to be a zombie apocalypse or something like that, some nonsense that is out there, some conspiracy theory. But again, some of the things I'm going to warn you might be considered a little bit controversial. It's not going to be heresy, though. I'm not going to be challenging the Bible or a teaching of the church. Don't get that idea. But it's okay if you agree or disagree. Maybe even, you know, you're going to sit there, I'm not going to say anything in the chat, I don't agree with that, I don't like that, I'm going to text Mr. Buchanan though afterwards and tell him I disagree. That's fine, but I'd rather you examine the credibility of information that I give and anybody else gives with your mind and facts, and then arrive at your own conclusions. I'd rather you do that. And you can still come to the same conclusion rather than be misled by the experts. Because in 1969, if you made lifestyle changes based on what Dr. Paul Ehrlich said, then you'd be very miserable with your life. You may have decided, okay, I'm not going to get married, I'm not going to have children, because he says the population bomb, you know, the big book that he wrote, you know, we're going to all, you know, we better, you know, hoard food or whatever we do. We're all going to die in oblivion. If you had made lifestyle changes based on this guy, you'd be miserable. But you know what? His false conclusions and his false prophecies never stopped him. And that's what, you know, you can just put that off in the little sidebar in the note in your pages, because all of this misleading information usually never stops these experts, these people, from their prognostications. So the title is Defend Your Mind. Now, I'm not sure that I'll be able to adequately explain to you how you can defend your mind, but I'm just saying that that's one of the things that you have to do. You have to defend your mind, because nobody else is going to do it for you. You alone are responsible for defending your mind. And I'm really serious now. You can argue with me about my facts and my research, blah, 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 but you need to remember this. It is, your life is going to depend on the fact that you defend your mind. So now, 2020 has been a very interesting year. Some might say very crazy, but I think we could all agree that it has kind of been a specific time period. It's been limited to the calendar. I always say that, you know, calendars, even though the ABC is going to give us a calendar for $5, you know, it's an artificial time period that man has designated, you know, a Roman emperor designated, the Julian calendar, basically. It's kind of an artificial construct, and I realize that, but all this craziness and this nuttiness of this year kind of actually began to bear fruit of things that had happened in the past, but boy, it just kind of boiled over, and it has made the calendar year 2020 just a really crazy, crazy time, hasn't it? Any disagreement with that one so far? Are we on the same page? Okay, everybody's nodding. Good. Silently disagreeing inside my head. Okay. This, yeah, I told you I'm in a mood. This craziness began in 2019, but then it began to erupt into 2020. It began just like the sermonette, you know, the growth, and then the fruit of it happened in the year 2020. The growth of it happened for the last few years leading up to 2020, but in January, there was the culmination of this extensive investigation into a phone call the president made with President Ukraine the previous year, and then it culminated in the articles of impeachment early in February 2020. It was kind of an embarrassing thing. Now, whether you agree, you disagree that it should have been brought, or whether you agree with the conclusions or what, I mean, There was never any legal action that was taken outside of that, not just because his party had a majority in the Senate, but because it was ludicrous to begin with. So people will disagree with that. But then soon after that, coronavirus hits the United States with the implications and actions for the remainder of the year. So you cannot doubt this, okay, right? You cannot doubt that our lives have been changed by this, maybe for a long, long time, because of the policy decisions made by experts, again, experts that we're told are just so far above any kind of scrutiny that they must be listened to. World economies have been strained to the limit. Many people have lost their jobs. The world economies, although, you know, things on the surface seem to be okay, world economies have been strained. You know, they've been printing the presses and printing physical cash and, you know, just changing the decimal points. It's all decimal. It's all done by changing decimal points and just done virtually anymore anyway, even if they didn't print cash. But people have lost jobs and kids have been shut out of school. Just a couple of the things. I mean, some of you have had to work from home if you're still working. Terry works from home now. She kind of likes it, though. I mean, that's not really been a bad thing, but she's lost pay. But, you know, that's been a reduction because of all of the loss of income by the university. But let's consider one consequence of what has been labeled the new normal, which I hate, by the way. Maybe you do, too, but maybe you don't. The new normal. Okay. Now, this is going to be somewhat controversial, and some of you are not going to agree with me, I know this, but just let me lay out my facts, okay? Not my facts, but let me lay out the facts, okay? These things. Okay? All right? Who does not have one? Who doesn't have one? Okay, you want mine? You sure you don't want mine? You may want it a little bit later. You may want it. I'm serious. You may want it later. Just kidding. But this analysis may be one that you disagree with, but that's fine. But let me explain. Let me lay out the fact on the masks. These things, in all likelihood, for most people, I'm not saying for you now, but for most people, they do more harm than good. For most people. So before you say automatically, no, you're wrong, I've seen this, I've seen that, blah, blah, blah. Just wait a second. Overall, it may be detrimental to your health in ways the experts haven't told you. And I'm not trying to start an argument or get people upset or angry or whatever. But here's the most recent information. And I mean as of late October. This is what the science says. But nobody wants to really pay attention to the science now because this has gotten popular. And I'll explain how it's become popular in so many ways. But the doctors are now saying, many doctors are now saying, but, you know, it's become such a part of and entrenched. But many doctors are now saying that it may make healthy people sick by reducing oxygen levels. Oxygen levels, and I can attest to that after being on a plane for 6 hours, and you're basically suffocating slowly on the plane with these things on. And you're in a tube, get it, right? The capacity is reduced by a third in some of the airlines. You're in a tube. You're breathing the same air, but that air is filtered probably better than the air that we're breathing right now, by the way, even on a plane. Another false story. I mean, they have these HEPA filters, which are incredible in the airplanes today that, you know, you've heard, oh, this air is bad in planes. No, again, those experts are wrong. Now the HEPA filters in all the Boeings and most of the planes, that air is good, but you got to breathe through this, not so good. Physicians are seeing an increase in facial rashes. Okay, why am I talking about masks? Okay, hold on. We'll get there in just a bit. They can cause an increase in the fungal and bacterial infections because guess what? Most people never wash their masks. Okay, and how pure and sterile do you think some of these stupid gator masks are that people wear like a turtleneck sweater. You know, how sterile do you think most of those are? People are breathing in and out. Sometimes they get a little cold. They're breathing in and out. And all of that air that they're breathing through this You think that's going to just absolve itself and clean itself? Now, I asked Terry to clean my mask. She cleans her mask. She washes them in the washing machine. That's about the best you can do. But unless you've got a fresh change of a sterile mask on a regular basis, I'm the expert for me now. I'm telling you that these are worthless, and they do more harm than good. I know it's a bold statement to make. Some people are not going to like it. Okay, I get it. So just disregard me for that. But there has been an increase in bacterial pneumonia that is attributed to face mask wearing. Most masks are contaminated because fresh ones are not used often enough. And the only way they could be effective is when they are fresh or sterile. But people, some people wear them in the car after they get out of the store. You got to wear them in the store. And I'm not saying don't try to wear them in the store. Some, you can go in and say, hey, I've got a medical condition, and most of the time they'll let you off with that. That's fine if you can get away with that, but then you're going to have all of the people, oh, is that guy not wearing a mask? I hate him. They do. They scream and yell, and you've seen the videos probably of that, where people have just gone nuts when somebody doesn't wear a mask. And in some states, you cannot be even outside without wearing a mask. I mean, in the outdoors, walking on the beach, nobody within 500 yards, you must wear a mask in this state. Serious, it's the truth. So there's so much disinformation. So masks are effective when they are as effective as they possibly can be when they are fresh and sterile. So bandana coverings, not going to cut it. Because COVID is so intelligent, so diabolical, that it is smaller than the pores in that fabric. No, I'm just kidding. Dentists are seeing an increase in gum inflammation and cavities directly attributed to mask wearing and all kinds of other bacterial type of infections in their mouths. Could really get into the nitty-gritty and explain this, but I don't want to make you sick before snack time. The Centers for Disease Control, which wants you to all wear masks indefinitely, forever, hey, we should always do just, well, let's just do it. Just, it's everybody's doing it now. Let's all do it. They say that 70%, do you want me to get that? Okay. Your son is outing you. Oh, boy. The CDC, Centers for Disease Control, says that 70% of those who have contracted COVID-19 have been infected despite wearing masks. I'll take my chances without the mask, okay? But mask wearing, just so you know, is likely to be around for a long time because it has become a secular religion. It is a religion. Some of the little kids, they love wearing masks. I mean, because it kind of, they get cool masks. It becomes a fashion statement and everything. It has become a secular religion. Now, not for you. I'm not saying it is for you, even if you disagree with me. But it has become from a suggestion to a mandate to a religious experience. Serious. Something that one must do to be kind to mankind. It's not even a law. I mean, it's a directive, it's a mandate, and I'm not saying, hey, disobey that mandate. No, this is not what I'm saying, because I don't. I wear the dumb thing wherever I go in the store. I'm using this example because it's something we can all do, we can all become compliant with this, and it doesn't change our lives that much. It's inconvenience, you're not getting enough oxygen, but if you're like me, you whip it off as soon as you get out of the store and you're in fresh air, but then you see everybody else walking around in the parking lots in 110 degree weather wearing a mask thinking that they're saving the planet. I'm saving my fellow human mankind. I'm just doing such a good thing for people. They feel good about it. So I'm not telling you not to wear a mask in public or to refuse the public authority or what is now peer pressure. But man, oh man, wouldn't it have been nice if along with this mask wearing mandate, Wouldn't it have been nice if they had mandated and made a directive, you know what, we want you all to stop looting and stealing and pushing over statues and killing each other too and robbing stores. That is a mandate, and we want you to observe it just like you're wearing the mask, because even the crooks are wearing the masks. They are. It's like an advertisement I heard on the radio. It's incredible. You know, the banks told you you couldn't come in with a mask on, but now you got to go into the bank with a mask on. You know, it's crazy. It really is crazy. And some of you are still going to disagree with me. I know that's fine. Don't get mad at me, though. I just have my opinion. You have yours. But if they could just protect the public in some other ways other than that, wouldn't it be great? So it's a lengthy example, and I'm going to add to it in just a bit. But the reason I'm stressing this topic is that it has shaped our world more in the last years, more so than fact. For the first time in 70 years, we have peace in the Middle East, but the most important thing is getting everybody to wear a mask. Now, doesn't that strike you as seemingly out of bounds a little bit? COVID-19 has become a huge political football because disease, bad, health, good, death, bad, life, good, right? It's as simple as that. Nobody can argue with that. But think about it. Here are some things that you don't often hear because it's not correct. It's politically incorrect, but it's not politically correct to advertise all of these things. As of October 28th, there were, according to the CDC, 210,679 deaths attributed to COVID-19. Now, that's awful. That's horrible. Anybody that dies, that's always a tragedy. However, now this has been misinterpreted, and I'm going to explain this a little bit. The CDC itself, and a lot of people have misinterpreted this statistic, so you know, people use statistics in many ways. CDC said that 6% of those deaths are directly related to COVID. So that means that 94% are not directly related to COVID, but that means it requires a little bit more explanation than just that simple thing, because there have been a lot of people who have contracted COVID who had a lot of other underlying conditions, two or more underlying conditions, and that's where the real problem with this disease has been, with people who have heart disease and diabetes and underlying conditions. And those people certainly are at much greater risk. So 94% or 206,000, this is in the United States, 206,760 came with COVID, but also with two to three underlying conditions. What is unknown is the exact percentage, as good as we are at counting, right? We really do a good job of counting things. There's never any problem with counting numbers, you know, finding things. There's no problem with that, right? We do not, and this is, I'm serious about this, and you cannot dispute this, because I do not allow you to dispute this. It's not allowed. You're not going to dispute it. What we don't know is this: how many exactly of those deaths that had nothing to do with COVID at all are lumped into that sum? Because you see, you can take all the numbers, and we found even just recently that you can take a lot of other numbers and you can lump them in and you cleanse them with the good numbers, and they all become, it kind of skews all of the statistics. So what we don't know is, we do have multiple accounts of knowing that people who died in a car wreck, people that got shot with a gun, they quickly tested them. Did they have any incidents of COVID in? Oh, yes, this guy had COVID in him. He was in a car wreck. And I even saw somebody from the CDC say this. Well, yes, he died in a car wreck, but who knows? He may, or a motorcycle wreck. He died because he got hit head on by a car, but who knows? Maybe the COVID affected him in some ways that it also caused the wreck to begin with. So we can't, there's no way of cleaning out all that information so that all your information is great. I mean, I've been studying this for months, and my study is, you know, not inconsequential, and I believe some of you have also studied this. It is not based on me just being kind of this layperson looking for problems or anything else, because I know people in hospitals, I know physicians, because of my background, and we do know that, you know, the cases shot up. We do know that there's been a lot of false, misleading reporting going on with that. For instance, the number of cases, somebody goes in hospital, they do have COVID, genuinely they have COVID. Most of the time they recover. 99.9% of the time people recover from COVID. But you test them once, have a COVID test, next day another COVID test, they add that to the numbers of cases in the county. It gets reported to the health department. The health department lumps them all in. The same person might be counted 3 or 4 times. That is irrefutable. So that makes it sound like, oh, we got 20 million cases of COVID. How many of those are repeats? You don't know, because they've all been lumped into the same database, which is kind of a familiar trend nowadays, apparently. 80% or 167,663 deaths are in the age group of 65 and over. So what are we getting at? What am I getting at? Most, the people who are most at risk are the people who are older in our society. But now people are so brainwashed that you will see many, many young people who have absolutely their chance of dying from COVID is like 0%. And yet they've embraced this mask wearing culture, thinking it's somehow going to protect them. 31% of all deaths, or 65,303, were 85 plus. And how many of those individuals died because they may have died anyway, may have had pneumonia at the same time, and actually pneumonia caused the death rather than COVID? Maybe they both interacted together. But less than 2% of all deaths have occurred in patients under 25. So now I'm not downplaying the health crisis, and obviously it's a concern, but has the reaction been worth it? Has the public reaction and the experts that have told you, you're going to die of COVID, because guess what? Fully 50% of people think, no matter what their age, the studies have shown this in the polls, which we know the polls don't lie, so we've got to believe the polls. 50% of those who are polled believe that getting COVID-19 is a death sentence. They really do. That's why you see people walking around in 110-degree heat in the outside, wearing a mask while they're riding a bike, running, doing all kinds of things. I saw a little video of the Arizona football team practicing, working out. They're in a closed area in a weight room. They're all wearing masks. Come on, man. Just. Okay, I'm not downplaying this health crisis, so obviously it's a concern, but let me read to you from the American Institute for Economic Health. This is an article that was published on the 2nd of November by Jeffrey Tucker. He writes, on March 28th, very early in the pandemic, the American Institute for Economic Health published an article that I felt at the time received far too little attention. It was entitled Drugs, Suicide, and Crime: Empirical Estimates of the Human Toll of the Shutdown, by economists Audrey and Thomas Duncan, cited empirical literature on the human toll of the economic devastation, that is, from the shutdown caused by COVID, etc. This article forecasts more than 100,000 excess deaths due to drug overdoses, suicide, alcoholism, homicide, and untreated depression, all a result not of the virus, but of the policies of mandatory human separation, economic downturn, business and social closures, closed medical services, and the general depression that comes with a loss of freedom and choice. Loss of freedom and choice. And that's what's happened in many cases. These two economists demonstrated that as bad as the virus is, policies that wreck normal social functioning will cause massive and completely unnecessary suffering and death. He goes on to write, here we are 7 months later, and the worst has come true. These two economists should be considered prophets. These are the kind of experts that were actually right, secular experts that were right. Sure enough, the Centers for Disease Control has documented a shocking number of excess deaths, not from COVID. In the Hispanic population, 40% of excess deaths, not COVID-related. In the black population, 46% not COVID-related. These are increases in death. In the white Caucasian population, 38% increases over a various spectrum of diseases, and whether suicide, murder, or depression, or family disturbances, or whatever. These are all lumped into the same category, but 38% which are not COVID-related. 77 in the age group of 25 to 44, 77% over previous years, excess deaths, not COVID-related. And in the 65-plus age group, an increase of 39% not COVID-related. The most startling data concerns the age group 25 to 44. This is a group with a COVID-related infection fatality rate of 0.0092%, which is to say barely a disease at all for nearly everyone in this group, and yet they're dying at a rate far above what is expected, and mostly from issues not related to COVID. There should not be any excess deaths. Instead, we find people dropping dead in ways that are shocking. The CDC says overall an estimated 299,000 excess deaths have occurred in the United States from late January through October 3rd, with two-thirds of these attributed to COVID-19. The largest percentage increases were seen among adults 25 to 44 years and among Hispanic or Latino persons. These results provide information about the degree to which COVID-19 deaths might be unascertained and inform efforts to prevent mortality directly or indirectly associated with the COVID-19 pandemic, such as efforts to minimize disruptions to healthcare. He goes on to say, and this is Dr. Scott Atlas, who's brilliant from Stanford University, says that's the CDC's way of saying that these policies are killing people. They're killing people. So I won't go any further into it. It's a very good article, but many other deaths have been reported far an increase this year, not related to this plague, this disease, health crisis, whatever you want to call it. But we have changed our way of life because of it, and that's the main point that I want you to understand. And I've taken a while to explain this, half of my time, as a matter of fact, but for a reason. The author concludes this is a rather cold way of saying that the lockdowns have failed completely to protect the most vulnerable and instead increased deaths among the oldest population, too. The havoc that these lockdown policies have done to school-age children is incalculable. There's no way of estimating it, but we know just from anecdotal information that it has been devastating. You know, when you're a young person, Mr. Walden was talking about what's really concerning you. When you're a young person, the things that really concern you are your friends and your school and your family, and yet all of those things and activities, for the most part, have been just shut down completely, and it causes depression. It really does. It is more serious than the danger presented to these kids in terms of any disease. And it's just unbelievable as to what has happened. Now, it's almost bordering on criminal intent that these lockdowns have really affected younger people who have no danger at all presented by COVID virus. And, you know, much more common for them to be affected by the common flu or cold or whatever. So agree with my premise that the manner in which this health crisis has been dealt with or not, you, I believe, must conclude, as I have, that these things that have happened in 2020 have had a profound change in your life and virtually everyone in the civilized world. It hasn't been something that has just affected the United States. It has happened everywhere. The first, second, third world. Habits and behaviors have changed. You have been forced to work from home or change your work environment with physical barriers, or you could have lost your job. That's awful. A lot of people have just lost their jobs. But maybe the only thing that has happened to you is that you have to wear this in a public place. But that is also changing. I would submit to you that most, if not all of it, all of the changes for most Americans and those in the rest of the world in trying to mitigate or slow the spread or whatever have been absolutely useless in the overall spread of the disease or by limiting deaths, if there were really that many deaths to begin with. Again, there's no way to separate out the false deaths from the real COVID deaths or the ones that had the underlying conditions or the, you know, in other words, the false deaths are the ones that I would say, okay, a guy had a car accident and he got killed head on in a car collision. Those things happen, unfortunately, in life. But they tested because of COVID. And of course, due to the CARES Act, which was enacted in March, I believe, of this year, CARES was the financial incentives that were given. This is another doozy piece of legislation that gave money to hospitals who were hurting because they couldn't do all of their regular surgeries, right? But if they identified a COVID patient, then they got a huge, if there was a Medicare patient, a huge increase just for the identification. If there was a death that was coded as COVID, another huge benefit and increase. So we have seen, there's no doubt about this, folks, we have seen an incredible number of inflation, so to speak, of these things because there's a financial incentive associated with it. Now, I don't have time to go into all the CARES Act and what it means and all that, but you can look that up. And, you know, I don't think you're going to find that I'm wrong on this. But because of the constant news coverage, as I said, fully 50% of all Americans believe that getting COVID is a death sentence. And the way I imagine COVID in the mind of most average people is, you've seen the picture of COVID, you know, this microscopic view of COVID. It's a kind of a gray ball, and then it's got these red things that are coming out of it, right? You know, that's the COVID. That's the COVID, that is under the microscope. But I imagine that for most people, COVID is like on a 100-foot ball of this virus rolling down Broadway and just shooting people. Ding, 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 it's the way people are reacting to it. And I think that most of it's been totally wrong. Getting the flu in 1918, if you got the flu, that was almost a death sentence. Within 24 hours, most people that got the flu, the great flu of 1918, were dead. And, you know, I'm not denying that early on, this COVID virus impacted people and didn't know how to deal with it. Now we know how to deal with it. The people who are most vulnerable should be protected. But the point here isn't that some of these precautions have been good at one time or another. But how real was the threat? How real is it now? And if you're like most people, and I'll admit to this, got a little feverish one night. Early on, when all of this propaganda was coming out, thinking, am I going to get this? And will it kill me? Okay, it was a fleeting thought, all right. Hang around for very long. But I'd be interested how many people have actually thought that that might happen to them. They might die because of this. So maybe that happened to you, maybe not. But it was a famous political operative that said, never let a crisis go to waste. Never let a crisis go to waste. And I think that that explains a lot of this. Now, okay, my background tells me that your best defense against this is just having a good, healthy immune system if you can. And I've never been really great one on taking vitamins or telling people about that or whatever. But, you know, I'm kind of leaning in that direction myself. But God's protection, first and foremost. But even if you got it, I've even thought, I'd really like to get this and get it over with so I build up some immunity, like I do with the flu every year. So at any rate, we're not going to have any COVID parties and spread to COVID when one of you gets it. But here's an illness that 99.9% who get it are going to recover fine. But at any rate, what does all this have to do with you being a Christian? Okay, I'll spend the rest of my time with that. I mean, I've really laid groundwork, and I know that there's probably going to be some disagreement, but Even if you disagree with my premise, you're not going to be able to disagree with this. You're not going to be able. I challenge you to disagree with this. What does this have to do with you being a Christian? Turn to Matthew chapter 24. Because I think that we in the Church of God, maybe in the greater Church of God community, maybe we have, maybe we're more likely to understand this than most people. I hope so. I hope that all of the churches of God, with the various groups, I hope that they're all understanding and realizing that there is something spiritual that is going on here as well. Not just something physical, not just physical precautions, but something that is spiritual that is going on. And it has never happened before. It has never happened before, ever, in the Church of God. Of that I am convinced, what is taking place in our society today. Verse 4, Jesus answered, "Take heed that no one deceive you." You see, there is a battle for your mind, and it's up to you and you and you and you. You all have to defend your mind yourself. So even if you disagree with my premise, you cannot disagree with what Jesus said. And he is talking about defending your mind and your attitude. This is one of the greatest warnings in Matthew 24, and I would submit to you that it is the basis of everything else that happens, at least for a Christian, at least for the people of God, that deception, deception, deception is mentioned in this chapter, and it's the primary chapter that we go to speak about what things are going to happen in the end. And people said, well, you know, there's always been deception. There's been deception since the early New Testament church. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but we're not talking about a deception that is talking about, oh, you shouldn't keep Easter and you shouldn't keep Christmas. We're far beyond that. We're way, way, way beyond that now. Okay, those things bad, Christmas bad, Easter bad, false religion, blah, blah, blah. That's not, I submit to you that that is really not what we need to be concerned about at this stage of the game as Christians. We don't need to be concerned about the false Christianity that started, you know, soon after in the 50s AD or whatever, and the basis of a false church, big false. No, get beyond that. Get beyond that. Let's bring you into the time of the end, okay? Let's come to the time that we're talking about, that we are living in right now, the battle for your mind. It's about deception. It's about deception. Many are going to come in my name, Jesus said, and will deceive many, many. Verse 11, then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. And you know what? I can see it so clearly. I hope that you can too. If something secularly can be done to convince people of a huge danger, which may really not be all that big a deal, but if you can be coerced to be compliant, to do the things that you're being told today, do, stay home, lock down whole nations, ruin economies, when, you know, people are standing off and saying, wait a minute, we shouldn't do this. But they're unpopular because death bad, disease bad. How dare you speak out about death, speak out against death? We want to prevent death. The battle is for your mind. You really have to think this through. All of this happens, all of the things that lead up to Christ's return happen because of deception. And I'm not talking about, okay, we're, you know, we got candy canes, we got trees and stuff like that. We're not talking about that anymore. All that bad. Okay, I get it. We're not talking about that kind of deception. I mean, that's what we've had to face for 1900 years, the Church of God. We're going to go through this. We're going to finish up with this. You're going to see this is just, it is child's play by comparison. Now, I would expect that by now you're sitting in the Church of God, you've already put all of that aside. You already know, okay, I know the origins of Easter. I know the origins of Christmas. It's all a deception, blah, blah, blah. That is not what's happening here in Matthew 24. It's not the point. It's not the point. We can argue about it later. But verse 12 says, because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. Lawlessness. Lawlessness, one of the primary things of the time of the end. And what are we seeing along with this pandemic? What are we seeing in the home of the brave? What are we seeing in the land of the free? Lawlessness on a scale that we probably have never seen in decades, since maybe the 60s, but all done in the name of a righteous action and attitude. And nobody, very few, call it out. And the ones that do stand up and call it out are labeled. They are absolutely labeled, and they have been labeled. Hold your place in Matthew here and turn to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 3. Probably won't be able to get to all these passages today, but there's a lot of them. I mean, this deception against you as a Christian. Now, we'll talk about what happens with the rest of the world in just a bit, but I'm concerned about you and your mind right now and your ability to defend your mind. Apart from me, apart from any of your friends, apart from your family, this is serious, folks. This is individual. This is what we've kind of been talking about this for a long time, your individual response to God and to Jesus Christ. It really is serious. Now, I've got no skin in the game here. You know, I'm a volunteer. I'm concerned about you, and I am moved very dogmatically to tell you that this is really very serious, what is happening in our world right now, and you need to take action. You really do. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 3, it says, "Let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless the falling away comes first, and the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition." People in 1995, "Oh, it has happened in the church." No, didn't. Oh, this is such a false prophecy that people were saying back at that time. Just really aggravated me then, and it aggravates me now if anybody brings it up. "Who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God." Now, I could go through this chapter. Don't have time to do that. Let's turn to 1 Timothy chapter 4. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 1. Few pages forward. "The Spirit expressly says that in the latter times some will depart from the faith, giving heed to deceiving spirits and doctrines of demons, speaking lies in hypocrisy, having their own conscience seared with a hot iron." You know, this comes because of lawlessness, because people are allowed and led to disobey God. And so they just, you know, the first disobedience is, you know, one step and then another one, and then the conscience is seared. That's how conscience becomes seared, by disobeying the law, things that they know to be that are right. So we can't spend much time on that. Let's go back to Matthew 24. I ask you to hold your place. Let's go to verse 23, where it says, "If anyone says to you, 'Look, here is the Christ,' or 'There,' do not believe it, for false Christs and false prophets will rise and show great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect." This is not something Christ said is going to happen throughout all of history. It's going to happen in our time, in the end times, because no one has ever had powerful signs and magic and everything else. That hasn't happened yet. It hasn't happened yet. But how compelling will it be when it is so convincing to the many? And in verse 25, verse 25, "Therefore, if they say to you, 'Look, he's in a desert,' do not go out. 'Look, he's in a room,' do not believe it." What is your protection then? Who are you going to believe? You're going to have to believe in your relationship with God. That's what you're going to have to believe in. That's what you're going to have trust in. It's your relationship with God, not any group, organization, or the church, or whatever. It's going to be you and God. Not that you're going to be alone. But what is going to alert you is the Holy Spirit of God and your relationship with God, not some pronouncement from, you know, our church, some other church or whatever. That's not it. It's an individual thing between you and God, and it always has been. Now, 1 John 4 and verse 3. Now, I just told you to hold your place in Matthew. I didn't say you had to hold your place and all. I mean, I remember listening to sermons where, oh, hold your place there, and then hold your place there. Wait a minute, I'm running out of fingers here. Hold my place. Wait, I can't go anywhere. 1 John chapter 4. And verse 3, or verse 1, pardon me, 1 John 1, 1 John 4, verse 1. Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits whether they are of God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world. So how are you going to do that? How do you test the spirits? I'm going to show you in just a bit. Here we are. Isaiah 8 and verse 20. This is how you test the spirits. Isaiah 8, 20. If they speak not according to the law and the prophets, because there's no truth in them. You should know that. I know it by heart. I didn't even have to turn there. I haven't even got it written down. But that may be a paraphrase, but that's what it says. It's what it says, right? And that is how you test all the wizards of smart in a secular way as well. Have you ever thought about that? That's, if you can look at their lives and examine it, I mean, I'm not saying that you can in every case, but if you can look in their lives and see law abiding in their lives, then that is a test for the secular prophets, not just the spiritual, quote unquote, false prophets. So that is what I look to when I examine the experts in a physical way and a spiritual way. Testing the spirits, you have to look at their lives. You have to look at how they conduct their lives, how they speak, and what they refer to. And the ones that I like to look to are the ones that talk about God and give praise to God, and the ones that say we should obey the law. We should obey, you know, we shouldn't have rioting and killing and looting and stealing and, you know, all that stuff bad. So when I evaluate somebody else, then if they're going to say, okay, that's a step up, may not be the full spectrum of analysis that you use. But while you're in John, 1 John chapter 1 and verse 5, 1 John chapter 1 and verse 5, it says, this is the message which we have heard from him and declare to you, that God is light, and in him is no darkness at all. If we say that we have fellowship with him and walk in darkness, we lie and do not practice the truth. So that's why when I've evaluated some of these secular prophets of doom and gloom, like the governor of Virginia, Dr. Ralph Northam, we're going to let the mother decide after the birth whether the baby is viable and whether that child should live. Right up until the time of birth and after birth, okay, that is murder. So those people, I'm kind of making fun of him and his accent, but he said it on radio in an interview, okay? So if somebody is saying that he's an advocate for abortion and I know that that's murder and you know that that's murder, kind of a strike in the column of not so good, right? Not a good leader. Not a good leader. And Isaiah 3, I believe it is, says that your leaders are leading you astray. So this is a litmus test that we should apply to others as well, because the prophecies say that lawlessness will abound. Okay, turn to Revelation chapter 12 and verse 9. You know this one as well. Revelation chapter 12 and verse 9. We haven't seen anything yet, folks. We have got to be on guard because we don't know when this is, you know, this is going to kind of cascade in, but I'm not trying to discourage you or anything like that. I got a feeling a lot of people in our nation are kind of discouraged, and maybe some are elated, but some may be elated for the wrong ideas or the wrong reasons. But in Revelation chapter 12 and verse 9, it says, the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. Now, I don't know that the devil is behind all of this mass change, but I wouldn't, you know, all of this silliness that has changed people's lives and ruined economies, but I'm pretty sure he is. I'm pretty sure, since he's the god of this world, I'm pretty sure that this is the mastermind behind all the plots, all of the things that are going on, all of the far-reaching implications into people's lives. It's chaotic. It's confusing. It's like you heard about the incidents in the state of Arizona for people apparently filling out ballots. Everybody were given these Sharpie pens. Where did they come from? Nobody seems to know where they, but they invalidate many of the ballots. I mean, they bleed through. And, you know, then the Secretary of State says, oh, that's not a problem. But then You know, some of the local county, what do they call them? Recorders said, you know, made videos, fill out in blue and black ink only, do not use a felt tip pen. So it's very difficult when you're evaluating these experts if you're not looking at law. And so this is a law. This is a realistic thing. If they're telling you to do something that is really not going to be the right thing and the valid thing, that even on a secular basis, you have to question it. So Revelation chapter 13 and verse 14, oh boy, we have puzzled about this, and I'm going to try to make this really simple in explanation. Revelation 13 and verse 14, it says, and he, we know who this is, the false prophet, deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth that they should make the image of the beast who is wounded by the sword and lives. So you have to worship this beast. You have to worship this government. And how is that so far different from what we are being told in our nation today? Maybe you're not thinking of it as worship, but it's kind of a secular worship to go around and tell people and mandate that they got to do this when the science shows that it's the way most people do it, unless they got like hundreds and hundreds and thousands of fresh masks to use in the last year. It's probably worthless and does no good. It may harm your health if you really want to know the truth. But going on to verse 16, he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand and on their foreheads. Okay, what is this all about? Let's just make this really simple. The mark of the beast, however it is enforced, you may not even be able to guess it now. But if you're not going to worship on Sunday, then you're excluded from society. Even as in many cases, if you can't wear this into Walmart, you're not going in the store, buddy. We're going to tackle you at the store. Okay, do you see how this can transpose very easily? Very, very easily. You worship on Sunday or you don't worship at all, and you're not going to have the ability to buy food for your family. Forget about your cash. It's going to be worthless, and they're already talking about that, digital currencies and cards, you know, the cashless society, and you're just going to reload it. I mean, they're already talking. They telegraph what's going to happen to us many times, right? They're already talking about they're going to take, you know, they're going to overtake everybody's savings, everybody's wealth is going to be replaced. So here's what you get. And, you know, if you're not going to worship on Sunday, you're not going to get this, whatever. Now, I don't know how it's going to be implemented, but this is the real deal, folks. You can see, I think it's not intentional by mankind, not intentional by Dr. Fauci. I wear a mask. Sometimes I go to a ball game, I'm not going to wear a mask. I don't want to, but, you know, hey, wear a mask if you want to, whatever. Secular prophet, secular expert. I've tried to tell people, here's a guy who's 80 years old. He's been a government employee all his life. He has never treated a patient. Never treated a patient. He's been in public service all his life. He's done some good things, okay? But he's not the guy I listen to for medical advice. My own personal physician is very good. He says, you know, the strange thing is, the flu is way down. He says, Steve, don't get a flu shot this year. Well, I wasn't going to anyway. I never do. Now, I'm not going to recommend it to my patients because in the Southern Hemisphere, they've had no flu. You know, the flu has magically disappeared. Oh, this COVID stuff, though. Oh, boy, so horrible. No cases of the flu. But if you can be convinced and mandated to wear a mask, what about when it matters to how you serve and worship God? Chapter 18 of Revelation and verse 23. The light of the Lamb shall not shine in you anymore, and the voice of the bridegroom and bride shall not be heard in you anymore, for your merchants were the great men of the earth, for by your sorcery all the nations were deceived. All nations. Deception on such a worldwide basis in ways that we probably still can't even imagine. In chapter 19 and verse 20, it says the beast will be captured, the false prophet work signs in his presence by which he deceived those who received the mark of the beast and those who worshiped his image. So it's going to be a real test. It's going to be massive deception. It's going to be on a global scale where the lies are truth and the truth are lies. Wherever somebody says the truth, he's going to be labeled a liar. He's going to be labeled as a false prophet, whoever lies. And then they have these signs and the wonders of the false prophet himself. He's going to masquerade as God. So what can you do about all of this? Okay, we're closing up now. One thing, Revelation 16 and verse 15. My family, who I supplied the notes to, are going nuts. Man, you cut out a lot of this. Yes, I did. I had to. Revelation 16 and verse 15. Behold, I am coming as a thief. Blessed is he who watches and keeps his garments, lest he walk naked and they see his shame. Okay, defend your mind. Defend your mind. It's going to sound like kind of a backwards way of approaching it, but you defend your mind by your actions. By your actions, are you obedient to God? Are you obeying the law of God? And it follows because what is in your heart and your mind, those are the things that you speak, and those are the things that come out in terms of action. And Christ said that this defense is very valid. Somebody who is watching themselves and keeps their garments clean. See, their own actions are spiritually attuned with the law of God. That is a huge, huge defense. And Christ said it in Matthew 24 as well in verse 46. Towards the end of this great, great chapter of end time prophecy, it's basically saying the same thing to us over and over and over and over again about how we conduct our lives and how we live is one of the most important things that we can do. So Matthew 24 and verse 46. Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he comes, will find so doing. What's he doing? He's obeying the law of God. He's obedient to God. Now, people sometimes say to me, okay, God is punishing this nation. You may be right. I don't know. I mean, it may be correct. This may be all a part of that whole thing. But I kind of don't think so, not just yet. And I'm going to tell you why. There is a principle in Ezekiel 33. And I don't have time to go through the entire chapter or even a few verses. But here's the principle in short. Ezekiel 33 shows us that if the wicked are not warned, and believe me, I know, hey, people should know right from wrong, right, living in this country. People should know that they should not break any laws at all, correct? Because we have lived in a nation that is governed by law. We have the rule of law. So they should know, but they've been overcome with a different philosophy which says, the end justifies the means. That's one of the most ungodly philosophies of all of man that has come out of the philosophers of the 16th, 17th, 18th, and 19th centuries. And they all embrace the whole thing. And you know what it is? It is lawlessness. It is anti-God. It is the determination that we are going to make the rules, not him. So that is what has been embraced by many. But even those folks deserve to be warned, and I submit to you, they haven't been. But I think that they will be. And when they are warned, if they listen, that's great. Hey, a sinner is saved. But if they are determined to go in their own way, then they bring that destruction on themselves. So I don't think we are finished by a long shot in this whole thing. But you can read Ezekiel 33, and it is a principle. It is a principle I think applies here because I don't think God just begins to, I mean, we've been given so many blessings in this nation. Now, I may be wrong in the timing a little bit. I think it's kind of hard to just, you know, withdraw blessings of which we have so many more in this nation now than we've ever had before without a warning. And I don't think that we can ignore this principle. God says even the wicked should be warned. Maybe some will turn from their evil way. So let's close with this. A couple of verses in the book of Philippians. Philippians chapter 3. Philippians chapter 3, Mr. Walden kind of alluded to some of this thinking process in his sermonette, in his message day. Thanks, Steve. But Philippians chapter 3 and verse 12, Paul says, "Not that I've already attained or am perfected, but I press on that I may lay hold of that which for which Christ Jesus has also laid hold of me. Brethren, I do not count myself to have apprehended, but one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forward to those things which are ahead, I press toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. Therefore, let us, as many as are mature and have this mind, if in anything you think otherwise, God will reveal even this to you." You have a promise from God. You be obedient. You follow God's directives, and He is going to protect you, and He's going to protect your mind. One last scripture in chapter 4 and verse 8. "Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue and if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things." That's how you protect your mind. That's how you defend your mind, protect yourself. So, brethren, be very careful in listening to the experts. You may have to do what they say if it doesn't violate God's law. But put on your thinking cap. Put on your thinking cap. Think for yourself. Be strong enough in your own self-determination to make decisions by getting all the facts you can and then act, even if it's only for yourself and your family. There are many ways that you can defend your mind, but godly thinking and godly thoughts turn into actions is the one thing that you can do to prepare and defend your mind. Anyone want to use mask?